Hi. Welcome to Leading Questions, a city election special. I'm Dave Davies. The primary election is 2 months away, and for Philadelphia, the stakes are high. While the city's population is growing and there's promising development in Center City and beyond, high poverty rates and a struggling school system threaten Philadelphia's progress. We're about to elect a mayor who, if history is any guide, will be in office for 8 years. We'll learn a lot about the candidates and their views in this and two future election specials, but one of the questions we want to focus on today is just what kind of leader we're looking for. Think of this as the first phase of a job interview for the mayoral candidates, where we ask the question, what are the leadership skills you need to run a big city? It isn't so easy for sitting mayors to speak candidly about what the job's really like. So we've asked several former mayors of Philadelphia and other cities to reflect on what they've learned from their successes and their mistakes. We'll be sharing some of their insights and experiences as we move through the show. Here's one from Mark Funkhauser, a financial auditor and policy wonk who served one tumultuous term as mayor of Kansas City. He says, to be mayor, you need to be better prepared than he was at dealing with the media.
I tried to talk to the press the same way I always had in my career, pretty off the cuff, and that was a mistake. As I told people, the mayor's mouth is a loaded gun. It has to be handled very carefully, and it took me a while to get to that. It doesn't matter what you meant. It matters what you said, and if it can be twisted by your opponents, it will be.
More lessons on leadership to come, so stick around. There are six Democrats running for mayor of Philadelphia. Where do they come from? What are they thinking about the challenges the city faces? Today, we're going to take an early look at them with our own Brian Hickey. He writes our daily blog on the city elections called 99, because the next mayor of Philadelphia will be its 99th. Brian's going to share some of his favorite moments and sounds of the race so far. Hey, Brian.
How are you, Dave?
Let's start with State Senator Anthony Williams.
Williams is the perceived front-runner in the race at this point. He's represented the state Senate seat in southwest Philadelphia since 1998, and that's the same seat that his father, Hardy Williams, held from 1983 until Williams took over. Whether it's fair or not, he has been branded as the campaign's quote-unquote charter school candidate. This is due in no small part to the fact that three pro-school choice businessmen dropped about $5 million into his campaign coffers when he ran for governor. And there's a $250,000 donation to a relatively new PAC that supports his mayoral candidacy. As you can hear from this clip in his mayoral campaign launch, he's running under a One Philadelphia mantra.
I don't want to be the mayor for just one part of our town. I want to lift up every part of my great city.
And that's State Senator Anthony Williams. Now, another formidable player, former District Attorney Lynn Abraham, spent 19 years as a DA.
She did. And as name recognition goes, she's probably ahead of the rest of the pack at this point, because if you've been in Philadelphia for any amount of time, you probably know the name Lynn Abraham from her time as DA. A moment I enjoyed covering Abraham thus far was when I found out that America's deadliest DA has earned the support of Philadelphia's puppy-loving community, as evidenced by this video that came from Philadelphia Animal Advocates for Lynn Abraham for Mayor.
Part of how a society is judged insofar as its humanity is concerned is how it treats its animals. Whether it's the wondrous...
So that's Lynn Abraham, well-known politician, a lot of name recognition, not a ton of money. It'll be interesting to see if she can maintain the momentum that she hopes.
Absolutely.
All right, let's go to someone a little less well-known, Doug Oliver.
People aren't giving Oliver much of a chance in this race. He's 40, he's Mayor Nutter's former spokesperson, and he's worked for PGW. He's going after the young vote, people who may not be engaged in the system itself.
And the guy can give a speech.
He sure can. He launched his campaign in Germantown in February and went right to a hardcore soundtrack.
I am a communicator. I am a teacher. I am a vision setter. I'm a team builder. I'm a Philadelphian, and I'm a man who loves his city and will fight for its future. And one more thing, I am happy to say I am running for office of mayor and hope to serve as your next mayor. Thank you.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Ho.
And he's playing Jay-Z, but he doesn't have a lot of heavy political friends. But former mayor Ed Rendell said some nice things about
him. He had some very kind things about him. And if I was on Doug Oliver's campaign, I would be working up newspaper ads with little bubbles coming out of Ed Rendell's mouth.
All right, Let's go to Nelson Diaz, a Latino candidate for mayor. We haven't seen that in past decades.
No, and if he were to win, he would be the city's first Latino mayor. His resume includes stops as a city solicitor, a court of common pleas judge, and general counsel at the United States Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD. Diaz's passion can sometimes present problems with his temper, as evidenced here at his campaign launch at Tierra Colombiana, when a reporter asked Diaz, a Puerto Rican, whether there is a specific Latino agenda or a specific Puerto Rican agenda.
I've been in this committee 45 years, so you can't tell me that that's correct. There is no such thing. We are all wanting equal opportunities, so please stop saying that.
Okay, so that's Nelson Diaz, Jim Kenney, well-known guy.
23 years on city council, we'll get you some name recognition in town. Now, Kenny's an interesting figure insofar that he's an Irish kid from South Philly. He's made a political name for himself taking on some of the city's more progressive initiatives, like standing up for gay rights, immigrants, and other issues. He was also groomed in a community, a political community, that was overseen by disgraced state senator Vince Fumo. And I assume that's something that's going to come up over the next couple months. And one of my favorite moments with Kenny in the race so far was the Monday after I got back from a weekend in New Orleans, and I had to drive to South Philly, where I saw him in the hallway of an elementary school wearing a Cat in the Hat hat.
With your head full of brains and your shoes full of feet, you're too smart to go down any not-so-good street. And you may not find any you'll want to go down. In that case, of course, you'll head straight out of town.
A politician in a funny hat. Okay.
I will be using that picture a lot during the next 2 months.
Kenny got in late, doesn't have a lot of money, but he has powerful friends in the labor movement.
Absolutely. Kenny getting the support of Local 98 and the Dougherty camp was among the more shocking things I've ever seen in Philadelphia politics, just short of Milton Street's press conference with a coffin.
Well, speaking of Milton Street, the one and only, he is, at least for the moment, a candidate.
I'm not going to lie. I really enjoy covering Milton Street. Does the former state senator, mayoral brother, and federal prison inmate have a chance of winning? No, not really at all. At this point, we don't even know whether Milton's going to be on the ballot. There's been a challenge filed in court challenging whether he is a registered Democrat and a Philadelphia resident. Milton claims that he mailed in a change of registration form to the Board of Elections, but city records show that he's been registered as an independent since, I believe, 2012. Now, Milton thinks that the fault lies on the County Board of Election officials, so he is not in any hurry to make his case.
I don't have to defend it. I don't need to defend anything. You better go down there and ask them how they're going to defend it. I did everything I was supposed to do.
Now, there is a single Republican, Melissa Murray Bailey, 36 years old, so she will be on the ballot in the fall against the Democratic winner. What are the chances there will be somebody else in the race then?
Well, there is a chance that there could be more. Sam Katz has been making minor waves about keeping his name in the public's attention and start launching a website where he's tackling issues that are pertinent to the campaign itself. And there's always a chance that Bill Green could jump in. He was deposed as the SRC chair. So while he's still on the School Reform Commission, maybe he'll get an itch to run for mayor as well and follow in his father's footsteps.
Brian Hickey writes the 99 blog covering the municipal election. Thanks, Brian.
You're welcome.
Hello? Hey, hi, is this the mayor?
That's me. You got me. What's up, young player?
Well, I got some problems that I need to address.
Well, go ahead, young man. Let off some stress.
First of all, the crime rate is out of control. Mm-hmm. And every time I call your office, they put me on hold.
Just about every mayor of Philadelphia over the past half century has had to grapple in one way or another with certain major issues: crime, poverty, education, and crumbling infrastructure. But over the past 10 years, a new issue is becoming more and more prevalent in the discussion.
The good news is you're bringing the good side of gentrification, which everybody likes. The flip side of gentrification is displacement. No one likes that.
That's the problem in a nutshell, as stated by a former Washington, D.C. mayor whose name happens to be Anthony Williams, no relation to the Philadelphia mayoral candidate. And yes, Williams uses the G word, gentrification, though some prefer to call it revitalization. Every mayor struggles to find a balance between the needs of newcomers and longtime residents. Throughout this election year, we're going to be visiting one changing neighborhood to see how the city's future looks to its residents who come from a diverse set of backgrounds. We call this occasional series Around the Corner. It'll focus on the neighborhood known as Brewery Town. In part one, WHYY's Katie Colinieri takes us to the corner of 29th and Flora Streets, just off Girard Avenue.
One day last October, Julie Dietrich was taking her dog, a lab mix, for a walk.
And I was walking up the street, and I saw it, and I thought, you know, it was very nice cursive writing.
What stopped her in her tracks were some words on a mural being painted by two young artists on the side of a dilapidated building in Brewerytown. Immediately, Dietrich thought of her neighbors, longtime residents of the neighborhood, and of the Baptist church just down the block on Flora, a narrow side street. She stopped to talk to the artists, who turned out to be from Brazil.
And right away, I said to them, I said, do you realize that, you know, your audience here may not appreciate that?
That was the phrase in the center of the mural, a quote from J.D. Salinger's novel, Franny and Zoe. It read, "This goddamn phenomenal world." Dietrich's lived in Brewerytown for only 6 years, but her sense of some of her neighbors' reactions was on the mark. The mural was about to become a battleground, exposing a clash of viewpoints in this changing neighborhood. Brewerytown is a transition zone between the Art Museum area and North Philadelphia. It strings out along Girard Avenue, an eclectic mix of row houses and storefronts, right across the Schuylkill from the Philadelphia Zoo. It's been a predominantly black neighborhood since about the 1970s. Dietrich has noticed a change, though.
There's definitely, you know, more white people moving in. I hate to use, you know, buy into the hipster thing, but, you know, that's what it kind of looks like.
If Dietrich sounds a bit uncomfortable talking about how her neighborhood is changing, she's not alone.
It's definitely becoming a more appealing neighborhood, but not a better community because of some of the divide.
That's Andre Wright, a social worker who grew up in Brewerytown until rising property values chased his parents out. Even the name Brewerytown is a sign of change. The name harks back to the beer makers like J&P Baltz and Commonwealth Brewing that used to operate here. But it had fallen out of use until it was revived by developers looking to appeal to middle-class buyers. A lifelong resident told me folks here used to call it North Philly. That changed, she said, when people who looked like me, young and white, started moving in. Sorry, she said, nodding in my direction. A recent study by Governing Magazine found that the pace of gentrification in the city, measured by home values and the number of residents with bachelor's degrees, has accelerated dramatically, 1,800% since the 1990s. Some neighborhoods, like Northern Liberties and Fishtown, seem to have been transformed. But the change in Brewerytown hasn't been so dramatic. Not yet, anyway. The change is more anecdotal. A feeling you get as you walk around the neighborhood. Or look at that mural on the corner of 29th and Flora. Just hours after the mural was finished, someone covered up the goddamn in its neat white and gold cursive with brown paint. Nicole McDonald was making coffee in her apartment on Girard Avenue when her fiancé Sam delivered the news.
It was the next morning. My fiancé actually was like, I'm pretty sure the mural's been buffed.
McDonald didn't want to go see for herself. She was the one who helped bring the pair of Brazilian artists who call themselves Criatipos here to paint.
They just kept saying that they really, like, loved the city, that they loved the energy, they loved the neighborhood. And I just kept thinking, like, they're doing this for free. Like, this is incredible.
This mural was a really big deal for McDonald, who saw it as a way to give back to this place where she's lived for a year and a half, after stops in half a dozen other cities.
And this is the place that I felt most at home because I love the people here.
The second day of painting, McDonald's cell phone rang. It was the artist telling her someone from the neighborhood was not happy.
So I came and a block captain was here and she was just saying that the churches were really upset about that. And that was the one thing I hadn't taken into consideration was that there were churches within a block's radius. So
Penny Brown, the Flora Street block captain, didn't want to talk on tape. But she told me she was offended the artist took God's name in vain, especially with children living in the neighborhood. The artist's explanation that the curse word wasn't that bad because J.D. Salinger had left off the final N didn't soothe her at all. Most of all, Brown says she was offended that they didn't consult the community before putting up the mural. Brown's neighbor, Julie Dietrich, agrees.
It was a quote that was meaningful to them. It had no meaning to their audience, and that was where they went amiss.
The mural controversy captures the awkward phase Brewerytown is living through. You can see it walking down the Girard Avenue business corridor, the corner store next to the check-cashing place, across the street from the new pizza shop and tattoo parlor, both coming soon.
No.
Warren Hill has lived in this house on Girard most of his life. Growing up in the 60s and 70s, he remembers when Brewerytown still had breweries. He says back then, it was a self-contained neighborhood where residents could get anything they needed on the avenue.
Uniform stores, clothing stores, candy stores. We had one of the oldest candy stores in America, Young's Candy Store. The coconut, chocolate-covered coconut, the caramel, the peppermints.
But Hill's not against redevelopment. He accepts it, so long as it benefits everyone. He spent 12 years in the U.S. Marine Corps, living all over the world. He says his travels have given him a different perspective from some of his neighbors.
Changing faces, changing people, changing racial boundaries is not dramatic. It's an everyday event. Throughout history, it has happened, and it's not going to stop now.
David Waxman is one of the people behind Brewerytown's changing aesthetic. He's a developer with MM Partners, which has been buying up properties here since the early 2000s, including the bar across the street from the mural. We met in Waxman's office on North 30th Street. The building used to be a crack house. He says Brewerytown satisfies the first rule of real estate value, location. It's close to Center City, convenient to highways.
It's really the same reason that it was a great open-air drug market in the 90s and early 2000s before redevelopment came here.
The crack epidemic hit these blocks hard in the 1980s. The dealers flocked in just as the good jobs were flowing out. The decades of blight that followed created opportunity for developers like Waxman. He takes me for a walk around the neighborhood.
And this is 2100 block of Girard. These were all crack houses on the north side of the street, which is like these, you know, these were like McDonald's. People just come and go all day long. And so I was able to acquire them and started here at 2945 and worked my way up the block as I got closer to 29th Street.
We get to 29th and Girard where the business corridor starts, and the trolley rolls down the middle of the street. We pass construction inside the pizza shop and tattoo parlor, a new coffee bar, and a bike shop. MM Partners' name is on them all. Maybe this is what Julie Dietrich meant earlier by the hipster thing. Waxman says he knows his work could have consequences for the longtime lower-income residents, but he wants the changes to be, quote, organic, resulting in something few neighborhoods actually achieve.
A neighborhood where working class and middle class and even upper class people can live together.
Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends?
Of all the people in Brewerytown I've talked to so far, Waxman is the only one who sees a direct connection between the future of this neighborhood and the upcoming city elections. Will his new young tenants stay here once they have school-aged children? Will the tax abatements that have encouraged redevelopment continue? Waxman says what happens next in the neighborhood will depend a lot on who the next mayor is and who's on city council. So the developer is paying attention, but right now others in this neighborhood seem disconnected from the process. I talked with longtime resident Ron Eel for more than an hour. And the question that stumped him was about what he thinks is at stake for Brewerytown in this election year. He says he doesn't know yet.
These politicians, they got it out of the game. I like to believe them, but a lot of times, I hate to say this, it's for themselves.
After the word goddamn disappeared beneath that brown paint, Nicole McDonald tried to take the conversation about the mural in a different direction. She brushed over the brown with black chalkboard paint and invited the community to write what they would like the mural to say instead. About 5 months later, all that's on the black patch are a graffiti tag and the suggestive image of a woman. McDonald says she's learned from the experience.
I'm sure that they view what I did as the same thing, right? Just painting without asking them first.
McDonald and her fiancé plan to buy a house in Brewerytown. But she'll wait a little while before doing any more art projects there. She says it's not her turn to make a mark. I'm Katie Culinary.
My city's gonna be so pretty. My city's gonna look so nice. My
You can check out photos and a video as part of our Around the Corner series at our website, newsworks.org. We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, I'll tell you why this year's mayor's race will be different from any other in the city's history. Stick around. Leading Questions, a city election special, continues in a moment.